My name is Helen Konozopoulos, and I'm your host today. I'm the co-founder of Odea.ai and also an adjunct professor at the Department of Computer Science at the University of Toronto. Today on our show, we have Hassan Verbitnobi. I am so happy he's joining us today, and I would like to welcome you to the show, Hassan.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome.
You know, it's been many years that we have worked together at the University of Toronto, at UTAST and at TIAP. But I really wanted you to introduce yourself, give your origin stories. What are you working on? Who are you? And why are you here?
Yeah, the origin story is really interesting. I think at the end of the day, as a result of kind of doing engineering and then, you know, working in the field of intellectual property, what I learned very quickly in the last, let's say, 5 to 7 years is I have this passion of moving technologies from the lab to the market. And this is something that started when I was working at the Canadian Intellectual Property Office as a patent examiner. Then I spent some time at the European Space Agency with their tech transfer unit, which is kind of my first taste in the world of commercialization. Came back to Canada, worked at Partech Innovations, which was the commercialization agency for Queen's University. And then that's how I made my way to Toronto with Mars Innovation, now known as the Toronto Innovation Acceleration Partners. And that eventually led me to my journey with Bitnobi, which is basically a privacy protected data sharing platform coming out of York University. So it's been, there's a lot of different pieces at play, but I would say the common thread here with all of the work that I've done is it's at the intersection of inventions and research and the world of business.
So I know there was a lot of challenges when it comes to, you know, being at the university and taking research out of the university. And those challenges around innovation has been kind of, you know, the buzzword saying innovation and research and tech transfer. What is your stance on that type of innovation? And what have you seen projects that you've worked on at U of D, to give us a bit of that background still? And then I'll ask you more about Bitnobi.
So I think what I've seen at U of T, for example, is, first of all, it's the biggest research institution in Canada. The budget that goes in on a yearly basis is astronomical, and it shows when you talk to some of these researchers. I mean, one technology that really stands out for me in the last little while is a company out of U of T called Quantum Bridge Technologies. Their mission is to create a quantum internet. And when I first heard that from one of the researchers who's now running the company as CEO, Mattea, he told me this vision, and he's like, look, we've got this quantum technology, and what we eventually want to do is kind of augment the internet to the point where it's using these quantum key technologies and enabling a completely secure internet. And so I think when I look at it from the perspective of the different stories that I've seen in the last little while, it's this mindset that you hear from different researchers when it comes to commercializing their technologies. And when you see them kind of move the technology from the lab to the market, you start to see the impact. And I think that's where, for me, it gets really exciting, is when someone takes their research and says, hey, you know, I'm an expert in this field of knowledge. And then they identify the business gap or the business problem. And they say, hey, you know what, I want to be able to commercialize this. And I think this is why U of T has become a leader in terms of commercialization of technologies into startups, for example. And Odea is a perfect example of it.
Yeah, that's where we came from. Yeah, that's where we started was, sorry, Hassan, I'm really messing it up today.
It's okay, no worries, no worries.
Yeah, that's where Odea came from, is from the research, is from the work, you know, thinking about how we can take something that is very, very theoretical and make it practical. So when you said about, you know, what is the practical application? I think that's when, you know, you're using something that's very, you know, you're hearing quantum, and that is very, very theoretical. And to hear research now that can become practical use cases, I think that's where it gets really, really interesting. And you're right at the beginning of it. And I think that's right. What you're seeing, right? So I think that's what really at least got me interested when I was at U of D, right? That's what I really wanted to be, right at the beginning of where that emerging technology was coming from. That is where I needed to be. I needed to know where things were being built because I was the user, right? I was the designer right. and the developer before. Now I wanted to be the one who was literally going, who are these people who are, you know, who are creating the Jeffrey Hintons, the, you know, who are like at the beginning of
right.
the practicality, right?
And you know what else is interesting is when you look at it from a bird's eye view, it's not just things that are happening on, let's say, the IT or the software side. There's amazing stuff that has been happening on the life science side too. When yeah. you look at it from like the different drug companies, technologies, obviously with the Banting and Best story, there's a rich history of what goes on at U of T. But I think that's one thing that I've noticed that separates U of T from a lot of the other institutions here in Canada is you can look at both sides, the life science side and the physical sciences side, and you see some incredible commercialization stories that are coming up.
Well, this year is the Banting and Best anniversary. There's also been a lot of developments in diabetes and in therapeutics this year. And I saw an announcement, it's an announcement from the Ontario government of getting access to therapeutics to patients. So I think there's, it's amazing. Sometimes it sounds a bit like history because theory seems very far away from us. But I think when you realize that the impact on a patient and on us as people, like that will need these future technologies and therapeutics and innovations, you're kind of at the center because you're transferring that out. You mentioned life sciences. What are some of the great projects you've been seeing at U of T that you just get really excited about that are now transferring out of U of T around healthcare and life sciences?
That's a really good question. I mean, so obviously I'm going to plug ODAI here. I think what your group has identified in terms of driving better engagement, marketing, and sales for pharmaceutical teams. Like I remember when I first heard the ODAI story, there were a couple of different angles you could have went with, but it looks like now like pharma is definitely one of them. I think other stories that are interesting. So I'm trying to think here now. So Notch Therapeutics is one, and I'm going to butcher the description of this, but this is all about CAR T cells and creating new cancer therapies. This is coming out of Dr. Peter Zanstra's lab, and then there's a lab connected to the Sunnybrook Research Institute, and I forget the gentleman's name right now, but that, you know, that's one really exciting company. So they got spun off about 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, maybe even 3 years ago, and now they're about 85 people. They've raised, I think they're Series A. I think they're going towards a Series B. Who else is there? There's a bunch of, Hypercare. We all know, you know Albert really well. So Hypercare is another great story. I mean, at least that's one that I can communicate a little bit better. But, you know, the fact that pagers are still being used in hospitals, just, you know, it's mind-boggling because, first of all, you know, they've been proven to be unsecure. So there was a hack maybe 4 or 5 years ago where there was a gentleman standing outside of the UHN hospital and he just had an antenna and he was picking off signals off of these pagers, right? And so Hypercare, what they've done is they've said, hey, look, we're going to give you this secure messaging system that looks similar to like an iMessage. And this allows nurses, doctors, and clinicians to be able to communicate with each other on a secure interface and share the information that they need in order to deliver care. So I think Hypercare is a really good example of an innovation that I've seen that's grown. And I know in talking to Albert, they're hitting their metrics in terms of, you know, deployments at hospitals. There's a whole bunch of other examples and I'm blanking on them because there's just too many. There's another group, Dr. Michael Hutchinson's lab out of U of T. He built a concussion assessment app. It's called Rhea, R-H-E-A. And I think what was interesting that, you know, what I found interesting about that technology was it was not just about the diagnosis. It was about the progression of how the patient deals with the symptoms and kind of gets better over time. So it was almost like a treatment plan that was provided in a very visual interface that gives you all of these cues that you need to follow to kind of recover from a concussion activity. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he's actually going to be launching that that app very soon if it hasn't already been launched. So lots of stuff going on the digital health side, on the life science side, in terms of like biotech. It's just incredible to see as someone who's kind of taking like a bird's eye view approach to it.
No, you make, as much as you say it's a bird, like bird's eye view, you are really integral to these team's success. You really do support, and you supported us. So I want to thank you on that. Now when it comes to being, the CEO of Bitnobi, can you give us a bit of a background of how you started that? Where were the pain points? Why? Give us the why.
I met Dr. Maren Latoyou at York University when I was a commercialization manager for that that group through the Toronto Innovation Acceleration Partners. And, you know, he's a big data cloud computing expert. And one of the problem statements that he relayed to me back in 2014 was, you know, there's a lot of data breaches going on. And one of the reasons for data breaches is because copies of data are being made from the data owner and they're being relayed to data consumers, which could be business analysts, data scientists, and researchers. And at first, when they showed me their prototype, it was basically this command shell line that, you know, popped up, and it was just code, right? And I remember they showed me the prototype and worked, and, you know, they ran this command line, and out came a number. And, you know, I remember Mark and Maren showing this to me, and they said, "Hey, look, we've just segmented the data. We provide access to the data." And I was like, "Okay, this makes no sense to me. So we need to take a deeper dive in this." All that to say is over the last couple of years, and so Bitnobi was incorporated in 2016, joint effort with York University and the Toronto Innovation Acceleration Partners. I became CEO in 2016 while also, you know, helping out with the UTest activities. And I think the biggest pain point that we saw from 2016 all the way coming up until now is, regardless of the market segment that you look at, sharing of data is a challenge. Security of data is a challenge, and data collaborations are a challenge. I was just on a call right before this interview where, you know, the client or the customer is relaying to me, "Hey, look, we want to be able to collaborate, but we just can't give them a copy of the data." And so when they learned what Bitnobi does, which is essentially an interface that allows them to be able to set the rules of engagement on the type of data they want to share, and the data consumer uses a web interface in order to interact with the preview of data and basically answer questions that they're trying to solve. And I think what we've noticed a lot in the last little while is this is a problem in the healthcare industry. We saw it with COVID. With COVID, one of the biggest challenges we saw was the data wasn't getting out to, you know, the health units or the Ministry of Health fast enough. But that's because there's checks and balances in place that have to make the data, you know, in order to make the data available, you got to, you know, hit those checks and balances. So all that to say is, you know, it's been a very interesting journey with Bitnobi. Lots of issues in terms of dealing with, you know, different types of paradigms of data. Certainly the competition is out there too. When we started in 2016, it was not necessarily like a hot topic. It was a topic. Now you can't go, you know, without any collaboration without mentioning data sharing or data privacy.
Yeah, no, you know, for me, data, you know, from the beginning, getting access to data, because you can't move a project forward without, you know, with any data, right? There's no way to, you know, especially your team is waiting for access to be able to start creating the solution, to start, you know, using it in an established solution or your strategy. You know, your strategy begins at, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? What is the big pain point we're going to solve? But then you're like, but we need the data to make that happen, because we can't, if we just kind of sit around waiting for data to come to us. So I think when I heard your story and what you were working on and trying to get that flow of and access, I think it's not only flow, it's just like, okay, the data's there and the question is, can it be securely and privately accessed and have those checks and balances, I think was something that really can move every team forward, can meet a project, can, as a citizen, as a patient, as a student, as a professor, as, you know, whoever you are, you always have to work with data. And it's one of the most, as we know, essential part of any tactical or strategic initiative that you need to work on. So that was very interesting. So do you have any, in your vision of Bitnobi, what is your big vision in the next 5-10 years for your company? Where do you want it to go? Where do you want to be?
I think one thing that we've realized in the last year and a half in interacting with a specific client, and you know, now that we've concluded the agreement, we'll hopefully put out a press release on this soon. But what we learned in the last year and a half is not only can Bitnobi provide access to proprietary data, but now there's an opportunity if a data consumer or an end user wants to interact with a proprietary algorithm, we have the capabilities of enabling Bitnobi to be that connector between data repositories and algorithms, and essentially creating a marketplace. And just kind of taking it a step back, the goal of Bitnobi is to eliminate the need of moving copies of data. The same thing can be said about algorithms. And you know, Helen, you probably know this better than anyone. When it comes to providing access to algorithms, you don't necessarily want to give, you know, the customer the code. You want them to send you your data. And I think one thing that we've learned very quickly is leave the data and leave the algorithms where they reside with the respective owners or the creators, and allow a solution like Bitnobi to kind of become and enable a marketplace where an end user comes in and says, I want to be able to interact with data source A, B, and C, and I want to use that algorithm, you know, algorithm X, in order to interact with this data. And that's what the Bitnobi solution can potentially enable in the future. And so we spent a lot of time working with one company here in Canada, and they basically built this black box algorithm. And I won't get into specifically what the output is, but long story short, this algorithm is controlled by the company. It sits on their AWS server, and they wanted to make, you know, be able to interact with clients. But what they didn't want to do is send that algorithm over to, you know, the client's location. So Bitnobi basically did an integration with this black box, and now Bitnobi becomes the interface that the client uses in order to interact with this black box. So the light bulb went off in pretty much the entire Bitnobi's team head, collective head, over the last, you know, 6 or 7 months. And I think what we're getting to now is a scenario where, and especially from a fundraising perspective, this is probably the story that I run with now, which is allow Bitnobi to be the agent that works for the creators of the algorithm or the owners of data, and use that as a mechanism to collaborate with the data scientist, the business analyst, or the researcher that wants to be able to interact with these two different types of resources. So that's kind of where we're going over the next little while. When we first started, it was access to data. Now we're starting to see access to data and algorithms at the same time.
This is amazing. And I think your comment about black box, and I think there's been a lot of discussions about glass boxes as well, is being able to look inside and understand and have transparency, not only how an algorithm makes decisions or how it has been coded to, you know, to work with the data, and what data is, that analysis of understanding how where the data is coming from. I think you've created this kind of sandbox for that innovation, and also utility that is so important to making these collaborations and that marketplace you mentioned happen. So this is amazing work.
I'll give you an example of that. So in terms of the collaborations from a life science perspective, there is a network called the Canadian Personalized Health Innovation Network. So it's CPHIN.ca in terms of the URL. And what this is all about is unlocking lung cancer data that sits in hospitals and making it available to clinicians, researchers, and oncologists. What's the main problem that they have? Access to data. And so Bitnobi is one piece of the puzzle. The other piece of the puzzle is being able to curate and structure the data so that it can be searched. So there are many examples right now where this is happening, and it's going to continue to happen and enable collaboration.
That's going to have a major impact for patients, you know, being able for clinicians to get that type of data, to be able to move things forward. So what do you think that final making impact will be for that patient to get that kind of, you know, to have that data from that clinical trials? What do you see that major impact for that patient would be?
And I think this is where it gets really exciting for Bitnobi, because again, we recognize that we're one piece. But when you look at the spectrum, or I should say the continuum of interactions from start to end, I think what ends up happening is the researchers and clinicians and oncologists that have the ability to interact with this data, it potentially means faster treatment. It also means lower costs for the healthcare industry. And I think the other thing that's going to come out of this is someone's going to come up with new innovations that either are from a digital health perspective or potentially even from a therapeutic perspective. Because again, when you're trying to build a drug, one of the activities that typically happens is you go back into past data, you past literature, and you try and figure out, you know, what has been done in the past, what can we augment, what can be, what other advantages can be identified. So I think the biggest advantage that I see, or the biggest piece for the patient, is going to be the potential for new treatment plans and therapies that will allow them to, you know, beat cancer at the end of the day. We've been talking about this, you know, collectively as a society for decades, but I think the access to data piece, streamlined access to data for clinicians and oncologists, is what's going to make the difference for patients going forward.
That is exactly, this is the conversation. This is the reason for the series, right? This is the reason, is to say these are collaborations, these are initiatives, these are technologies that are trying to facilitate that end journey, that patient journey, to support their journey and support multiple journeys across the industry, to try to that impact that will happen at the end of the day is to help that patient and the doctor and the oncologist and everyone who's around that most important person, right? The patient. So I really want to thank you, Hassan, for coming today to Making Impact. It is, again, always nice to see you. It is always nice to learn about what you're working on. And it is really great to hear how much you've progressed over the years, and again, how you're making a huge impact in your community.
Appreciate the time, Helen. This has been awesome.
Awesome. Thank you. Again, I really want to thank everyone who joined us today for the Making Impact series, where we talked to some amazing thought leaders in life sciences and how they're making impact in their communities and their societies. Thank you so much.